Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
All right, folks, buckle up. This episode of Blue Collar BS is a roller coaster ride you don't want to miss.
We've got Bryce Harum, general manager at Central Paving and the founder of Bridge the Gap Services. His story? Straight up powerful.
Imagine this, a $1.5 million loss, 66 people laid off, and the weight of failure squarely on his shoulders. Most people would have quit, but Bryce did not.
Instead, he owned it. He rebuilt and discovered the truth that leadership isn't about chasing titles or money. It's about chasing impact.
And Bryce lays it all out there, how vulnerability, humility turned him into a better leader, a better teammate, and of course, a better man.
We mix in some laughs, the lessons, and some rapid fire fun, basketball, golf, and a few surprises.
This one is real, raw, and packed with lessons for every business owner and leader out there.
Let's fire it up and get into it.
Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Blue Collar BS. How you doing today, Brad?
I am fantastic, Mr. Doyle. How are you this day? And you can lie to us. It's okay, because pre-show
you were a little bitchy. Everything pre-show is fantastic. Everything is awesome, Brad.
Yeah,
it's whatever. A great day. How do you like that?
That is a little sarcasm, a little facetious. Pick a word.
Yeah, pick a word. Go with it. And if you believe me, I've got, you know, some swampland in the Antarctic to sell you. So we're good.
Warm
to
there.
Yeah.
It's getting warmer there. So it could be swampland.
It could be.
Depends what you read.
It could be. So, Brad, who do we got on the show today?
Oh, we have a gentleman, Bryce Harum. Here we go. I forgot to ask the question pre-show. Damn it. He is founder of Bridge the Gap Services, BTG, Coaching Consulting Services, located out in Washington. He graduated from Central Washington University with a degree in construction management. And the reason we got hooked up was because he is part of Central Paving and became the general manager in 2022. And he has an amazing story about how his leadership journey has transformed and created his passion, his leadership cycle, his purpose, all the things. And sometimes you got to go to the bottom before you rise to the top, right, Bryce?
Even if the bottom is way, way down there. Yeah.
So welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Bryce, before I forget, which generation do you identify or fit in with?
That would be fit in or identify as.
I don't know. Are they different or the same?
So I'm a millennial. Okay. I am
just
a millennial.
Like Steve.
Born in 1987. I would say, you know, but I grew up old school construction, so I was probably relate more to the boomer side. But I am a millennial.
Okay. All right. So tell us about your journey, like how it started and how you got into the construction side.
Yeah, how does an old soul millennial get to where they are today?
Yeah, old soul millennial. I like that. That's what we're going to call that from now. That's what I'm going to start saying from now on. I like that.
We're here to help.
I wound up in construction management at college. I made the decision to go into construction management. Always liked construction, but never really around it. My father was an engineer, civil engineer, but other than that, did not have much experience in or out of it. And said, yeah, I like building things. I like messing around. So I'm going to go into construction.
Okay.
And that's how it started. And I went right into a project manager role right out of school, which means I was hated by every field guy on the planet and gal. On the planet.
Because you didn't know anything and you were in charge. It's okay. Mm-hmm.
but I acted like I knew everything. That's the problem.
Correct.
Exactly.
All the other folks that are out there that say, hey, millennials can't figure it out. They can. You just got to sometimes kick them in the ass here and there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So keep going. You figured it out. Keep going.
Yeah. So I dove in and, I mean, honestly, when we say that joke, you know, I was hated. I got my ass kicked. I went out into the field telling the field, this is embarrassing to say, Brad already knows the story, but I'll say it again. Trying to tell the field on my first large job in the civil side, which was actually a couple years in at that point, that this is how you build it. Because this is what the book says. I don't know how, by God's grace, I did not get punched in the face. I made it out, but it was a long road for me of at that point figuring out I didn't have the respect of the crew. And so for me, I've now almost 17 years, if you count school and times I spent in the summer, I'm about 17 years in and around the industry now. And all along the way, it's been having to earn the respect of the field and try to figure out how to do that effectively.
So how did you do that?
So good question. Depending on if they're listening right now, they might even tell you I haven't yet. But I ended up going, I learned after that, I learned very quickly that I didn't know shit. And in order to get them to respect me, I had to start asking them what they needed from me. And so I would actually spend more time. I actually requested the tougher superintendents, the ones who didn't respect me. And when I went out on site, I'd say, great, can you please, you know, help me understand how you're building it so that I can better serve what you need in the office. And the more I did that, obviously, the more relationships you build, the better it gets. And
so question. So when you asked them to help me understand and they showed you, you know, anchor bolts are always out of location, or, you know, the purlins aren't necessarily right, or they're cut too long or they're cut too short because the dam engineers don't know how to detail anything. How did you deliver on the expectations back to the guys in the field that you were going to make it better for them?
So the biggest one you can start to do is, I think where we get into a lot of trouble is we assume what people need versus actually understand what they need so you can anticipate what they need.
Right.
And when you assume, it gets dangerous because you don't actually know if what you're assuming is correct. So by working with those guys and asking the questions and figuring out either if it's timeline issues, is it not getting responses fast enough? Is it people just not getting responses at all? You know, getting a better understanding on, okay, if these are always going to be out of line, then I'm going to always look for that in the plans. I'll always ask that RFI if we need to check that, verify that before the job starts on the next one. You're not always going to be able to change it then. But what I usually ask for now is I'm trying to fix it for the next one. I'm trying to stay ahead because my job, you know, this is my favorite, probably, I don't know if you call it a metaphor, maybe. I don't know if it's a metaphor, but the field drives the bus. I make sure the lights are green. And so that's, you know, that is the, that is how I tried to prepare and anticipate for those guys, that if I knew what they needed ahead of time, then I knew when to ask the questions so that I could stay one step ahead.
I like that. I like that, that image. You need to work on that because ultimately that will fit into, see, so you got, just look at his logo, right? The BTG, right? Now imagine the logo with the bridge on, a red light, green light on both ends of the bridge, the bus coming over. Here's Bryce over here, making sure all the lights are green. Like, you got some, see, old soul millennial with a new logo, new opportunities and more stuff. We are just,
and we're gonna need some Gen Z's in here too. Then we're gonna need some everybody. I'm gonna need a little bit of everybody in here.
Right, exactly.
The last thing that was really the biggest game changer for me, and it took longer than I would like to admit, because we all have an ego, and I was embarrassed to not know for a long time. So I would hide it. I hid it that I didn't know. And I learned, and I didn't actually really get into this until I became the general manager here at Central Paving, to when you go out in the field and you own the fact that you don't know. I don't know. I've never paved. To this day, I've been on a paver. I've ran a paver twice. So I don't pave. But no, I go out there.
You don't and pay, I, you know, you don't pave for a living, but I have paved.
Yes, correct. Yep. And now I'll go out. I was never scared to grab a shovel. I was never scared to get in the trench. I was never scared to work on the crew. Mm-hmm. And when that comes out now, it's great. Teach me. So now when I go out, I'll pick different people. They could be the guy who's been there for a month or the gal who's been out there for 2 weeks. What have you learned? Show me. Show me how to do it. And that has been a tremendous gift as far as, one, understanding the struggles that they see, understanding what they go through, and then also myself, I get to learn to build a relationship.
So when we had our pre-call, can you share with our audience when you got the promotion to general manager and that the leader, that conversation with your leader and those types of things? Because I found that to be very powerful and insightful. And I think too many people hold those statements in that avoid that conversation because it's uncomfortable and you were willing to have it. So if you could share that story with us, I would greatly appreciate it because it's an awesome story.
We're going to, all right, we're going to get vulnerable then. That's the deal.
Right.
I'm going to keep going. I'm going to go through both years. You stop me if you want me to stop. All right. So I'll start running through. In 2022, I was asked to be the general manager for Central Paving. I'd spent more than a decade as a project manager across commercial, residential, heavy civil. And then I had been about a year or two in the asphalt side at this point. They had asked me to be the general manager, which I wanted to be the boss. Mm-hmm. It was a one track mind. I had come from being the young guy on almost every team by 15, 20 years as a PM to all of a sudden, I was the oldest guy. I was the experienced guy. I was the oldest person at the company, older than the owners by 5 years. So all of a sudden, I became the person everybody had to seek advice from. You become the hero, right? And
get the cape on.
Yeah. And damn, it felt good. It felt good. And so I said, I'm gonna be the boss. And I went for it. And which is funny because I've never really had that mindset before in team sports of anything of wanting to be that the star, that person. But the ego kicked in again, and I said, I'm going to do it. So they offered it. Obviously, at that point, that's what I wanted. I took it, and I failed. Terribly, I failed. I led the team to our largest financial loss the company has ever seen. Roughly just under $1.5 million loss. And as a result, in order for us to keep moving, I was left with the decision to let go of 66 people.
Wow.
This one, as Brad knows, this is where I start to hesitate.
This is because, a very impactful story because you took ownership. You took ownership of your situation, which is better than most because you could have easily said, fuck it, I quit, I'm out, and gone on to the next thing and let your owners deal with it.
Yeah, it's never felt right that I got to stay and they had to go. But in order for the company to move on, that was a decision that was the only decision that needed, that had to be made at that point. And the problem was I didn't really know what I did wrong. And so I dove back into it and I tried to figure out why and how I ended up in that position. And the biggest thing I can come up with is I was running a company. We had about 100 people at the time. So 2/3 of the people had to go. I was running a company like you would manage a job. I was doing it completely off of like basically a spreadsheet. Everything was budgets, assets, even the people. So I went a completely different direction from honestly who I am. But if you go back to who I was growing up,
right,
to the person I thought I was supposed to be as the boss. I was always taught that you're not allowed to be friends with the people you work with as the boss. You're not allowed to be weak, can't show emotion, vulnerability. Yeah, right. That doesn't exist, you know? And so I avoided every conversation that needed to be had. Even when I knew it needed to be had, I didn't have it. And I treated everybody like they were a number. And because of that, no problems got addressed, nothing got fixed, and we wound up where we were. And it's never just one thing. You know, you talk to everybody on the team, there is a mountain of reasons and combination of reasons as to what led to that point. Part of that being we also got very, very confident in what we were doing. Yeah, we'll say cocky. We got very cocky in what we were doing. And
all young guys coming and kicking everybody else's asses and taking work from everybody and, riding the wave and shit.
It led to bidding jobs. You know, you bid a little bit, you know, a little bit more, a little bit bigger than your britches maybe be able to handle, a little bit bigger. And then pretty soon you wind up in this huge mess with all this work that's really slightly above what you're ready for. And now you got to hire to fill seats. And so you don't have the right people, don't have clearly the leadership skills. It all, you know, it all spirals at that point. Mm-hmm. So coming into 23, I called for a meeting with about 30 to 35 of us left. And right before the season had started, we run about an 8-month season here in Washington State. So it was about the end of March and I didn't know what to say. So I just sat there at the front of the room and there's a whiteboard, like the one behind me. Maybe this is what I should have wrote on there, Brad. This would have been a good smart ass comment to write on there. I wrote, I'm sorry. And that's all I could write. I turned around. It felt like I was up there for half hour, just not saying a word. I said, I'm sorry. This is on me. This is on nobody else. The people who are gone because I failed and I will never let it happen again. And so I still didn't know how to fix it is the problem. So,
well, I will say that step right there was step number one in how to fix it, right? because it changed the 35 people that remained, their perception of what was going on.
It ended up going. The only thing I knew at that point was, one, it's not about me. I did get that part. It's not about me. It's about the team. Mm-hmm. And which is, I grew up in team sports. I knew that. I had just let myself lose that perspective. It wasn't about me. It's bigger than me. It's about the people. And so I wanted to help. And you talk about autonomy, you talk about delegation, you talk about, you know, giving the team what they need. I wasn't the best at it at first. Really, it's still probably not. I mean, you got your good and bad moments. So
we all do.
And I dove in to trying to solve every problem. But the problem was I had to be the one to solve it. And so I threw myself into every problem as if it was my problem.
Mm. Have you ever heard the saying, not my circus, not my monkeys?
Well, clearly no. And it worked. We ended the year doing half the revenue and making greater gross margins than we've ever made. Mm-hmm. And sat down with the owners in the last month of the season and they said, this is fantastic. This is what we want. We can do less, make more. Who wouldn't want that?
Right.
And I quit. I said, I quit. I'm done. What are you talking about? You just made more in incentives and bonuses than you've ever made. The team, the company just made more than it's ever made. I said, I had turned into the person I absolutely hated. I didn't know how to handle the stress and the anxiety and everything that came with being the one in the middle because I didn't know how to utilize everybody to their full potential. Mm-hmm. And I would say, frankly, we probably didn't have all the right people in the spots either. Mm-hmm. And so I relied on the two things I knew to solve the problems, alcohol and nicotine. That was it. And for 6 months, it was more or less just a fog. You know, you drink just to get whatever you can out of your mind. And during the day, it's nicotine and whatever else you can find to calm the nerves and deal with the stress.
Right.
They give me the weekend. Just give me the weekend and think about it. Yeah, all right. Well, I'm pretty stubborn. So we'll see. Well, you know, I'm pretty sure, pretty set.
Pretty sure I'm not changing my mind here.
Yeah. The biggest one for me was if this is what it was going to be like, and I went as far to say, this is what the industry is like, I want no part of it. Mm-hmm. I'm a shit husband. I'm a shit dad. I'm not there for my kids. I'm not even really there, in my opinion, for the people at work. I'm just getting by, mm-hmm. you know. And so they ended up, I went home, and for the first time in my life, I started writing and I started journaling. And this has become what I now call my why journal. And I ended up writing, why do you love the industry? And by the end of the weekend, it was the people. And I love the people. I love what this industry stands for. I mean, Brad, you and I went rounds on this when we spoke. I love being able to see generation to generation what my kids and my grandkids and the ones when I'm not even here can see what different generations have built and what I could have been, what I was a part of. I love that. But I love the people. We are dysfunctional in the best way.
Mm-hmm. And You're not wrong.
I'm here for all of it. I love it. And mm-hmm. at that point, I said, you know, I stayed. I did stay. I stayed at Central Paving. I'm still here at Central Paving today, but I wanted more. And that's when I came to the BTG. I said, I want to help make an impact on this industry. And if I'm going through things like this, I guarantee you there are thousands, if not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people going through the same exact thing.
Yep.
And so it's gradually morphed into what I get to do now, working at Central Paving. And I basically coach and build teams for contractors and effectively build the integrator to smaller companies who want to expand and get that owner out of the weeds so that they can work on the business instead of in the business.
Mm-hmm. So as you went through the journey, two-year journey,
that long ago, man. This is going to be a lot better when it's like 2035.
It will be. Yeah, you are correct. But over that 2-year period, what is the one thing you would tell? Because we're seeing Gen Z being promoted at a faster rate than millennials, leading teams and different things. What's the one thing you would tell young leaders that is the, it may sound stupid, it may not be comfortable, but this is what you really need to do?
Chase the impact, not the title. The people I interview, now, we have a lot of Gen Zs we've interviewed over the years and hired over the years. And, you know, I know that we speak about it. I like the way we all talk about it here, or I hear you guys talk about it on here. Mm-hmm. I'm a large advocate of Gen Z under the right leadership, because mm-hmm. there mm-hmm. are a lot want to work.
Yes, 100%.
They want to know how they can make an impact. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes what gets caught up is we get in and we get so focused on what's the next step. Where am I going? Where am I going to be? That, okay, mm-hmm. I want to be the boss. I want to be the general manager. I want to be the foreman. I want to be the superintendent. I want to be the project manager, the senior project manager. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, you feel like it's the right move. You think you deserve it because you've been there the longest, or the other person, maybe the senior project manager quit. You've been there a year and you think, well, I'm the next in line. Obvious choice.
mm-hmm.
Or, is it because you want the money? And most cases, when you're not seeing the bigger picture of what you're getting, we talk about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. When you're not getting those top levels,
mm-hmm.
you focus on what you can get, and you want to go on the pay. You focus on the pay. And the first thing I will tell people, if one of your first two answers is pay, then you're not ready. Because I thought that that's really what I wanted too. One, I wanted to be in control, which is your big red flag. And mm-hmm. two, I wanted the money that came with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed out on the impact. It took me 2 years to find out that on how to make an impact. And that's really the point. Mm-hmm. I luckily get to stay in this position right now, but I don't need the title of general manager to make the impact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big one that I work with people when I talk about the middleman mindset and bridging the gap. As the project manager, you can do that. As a foreman, you can do that. As a superintendent, you can do that. Everybody has the capabilities of doing that. And when you're building that, that is the culture. That mm-hmm. is what you're creating. And you are the ones who are holding that together. Not the owners, not the seniors who are in the office and, you know, might not see on a daily basis. You're building that with the people you've got right in front of you.
You're working on that personal power versus title power.
Yeah.
And that goes so much further and so much longer. So, Steve, I'm going to throw a curveball at you.
Go for it.
Because we're not going to do bite your tongue.
Yeah, I got that.
We're going to do a quick little rapid round of something.
Sure,
so
go for it.
We're going to ask you a bunch of questions. First answer right. pops to mind, okay?
Okay.
So very simple, very easy. Not overly. Favorite candy? Fuck. Why are you on the show? Favorite music?
One top of mind.
I know. Jesus. Favorite music?
Country.
Favorite sport?
Basketball.
Favorite team in basketball?
Seattle Supersonics.
Okay, well.
Right. Holding strong. They're going to come back one day.
They're going to come back one day.
There you go. Bucket list vacation location.
I've got a different, can I tweak that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah.
I have a bucket list to play a round of golf in all 50 states.
Okay. All right, let me know when you get to Wisconsin.
So far, I've only made it through about five, but I got Hawaii checked off the list, so we're getting nice. Somewhere.
All right, well, when you get to Wisconsin, let me know. I got lots of places we can go.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Living or dead, who would you want to have a conversation with?
That is one of the questions I ask in my interviews. That's one of my favorite interview questions. You must have read one of my posts. I'm going to say, yeah, you took that from me. I'm going to say my grandpa.
Okay, why?
My grandpa was a civil engineer as well. And what he did and what he got to be a part of, I took for granted when I was little. And he helped put in the, you know, the first underground sewer system in Cairo and
oh, wow.
in Egypt and helped design it as an engineer for CH2M Hiddle. And he got to be boots on the ground with a lot of that stuff. And I didn't care.
Well, let's get him on the show because I want to talk to him.
Well, he did pass away, so he's not around. But I'll let you know. Hopefully, I don't catch him. Hopefully, I don't see him first. But if I see him first, I'll let him know to give you a call.
Exactly. And then last one, Ginger or Marianne?
Wow.
Ginger or Oh.
What? Oh.
Ginger.
Okay.
Wow.
I had to throw it in there, right? It's the age-old question, right?
Okay.
Well, that's great. So, Bryce, how do people find you other than LinkedIn?
Right now, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, I'm on all of those. That's probably the main areas to find me, unless you want to come to Washington State. I'm right smack dab in the middle, Ellensburg, Washington. Mm-hmm. So, I am speaking at one event this year, or actually next year will be in February. That is part of the PAVEX. I am part of that education board. Nice. That'll be down in New Orleans this year. It's going to be down in New Orleans.
Nice.
February. And other than that, just the main one is I'm most active on LinkedIn, you know, so I would love to speak to anybody, speak with everybody, and anybody who's curious about middleman mindset, building teams, team alignment, starting out building teams, love to help. You know, obviously mental health, I'd love to help. I'd love to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I will be the first to say it. But part of coaching is you have to be willing to go there. And I'm willing Correct. To go there. I'm willing to have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Thank you so much for one, connecting with me on LinkedIn to begin with. Two, for sharing your story here with this, because your story is probably not unlike many others. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be shared and it needs to be celebrated because there is there is success out there, and too often we don't find it in the right places. And so thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, all right. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We'll see you soon.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.